Vamanadeva's appearance day, 2009. The Leela begins with chapter 15 of the 8th canto and goes on to chapter 23, about 300 pages of description. It starts off with the description of Bali Maharaj, who performed a massive yajna called Vishwajit Yajna, a sacrifice by which he could become Jit, victorious over the whole universe, Vishwa. And he received so many benedictions and paraphernalia from that yajna that would enable him to conquer the demigods, chariot and all kinds of weapons. While all these blessings, he immediately attacked King Indra of heaven. All the demigods then left the heavenly planets and assumed different bodies. Kamarupinam. Kamarupinam. Demigods have the ability to change their form at will. Demigods were advised by their guru, Brihaspati, that they would not be able to win if they challenged the demons, so they left. In a previous battle with the demigods, Bali Maharaj actually lost his opulence and died in the fight. But his guru, Bali Maharaj's guru, the guru of the demons, Shukracharya, he brought Bali Maharaj back to life. And as a result, Bali Maharaj became disciple of Shukracharya and served him with great faith, offering everything he had. Chapter 15 describes the beauty of Indraloka, the Nandakanana forest, and so many beautiful ladies and beautiful streets and golden doors and so much opulence. And verse 18 describes Sura Sri Keshavibrashta Navasogandika Shrajam. Says that the flowers, the breeze that was blowing in the streets through the city, was carrying the wonderful sweet fragrance of the flowers falling from the hair of the demigoddesses. And Manacharya, in the 10th canto, he explains, possibly on the basis of this verse, he says that when there's repeated references to the demigods showering flowers upon Krishna after he kills a demon, those flowers are actually falling from the hair of the Surastri Keshavibrashta. These are falling from the hair of the demigoddesses that are watching Krishna's leelas in the flower airplanes above Braj. The demigods were amazed, especially Indra, how the demons got so much power to defeat them. So Brihaspati, the guru, he said that what happened, the Brahmana descendants of Brigamuni, they endowed him with this spiritual power. So Balimraja's power was not actually his own, but that was the power of his exalted guru, Shukracharya. Prabhupada explains in text 28, and by the parampara system, guru, shishya, line of guru and shishyas, one can be endowed with the original spiritual power coming from God. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshaya vidu. What is this power? What is the nature of this power? It's described that this power is Brahma Teja Samaditam. This is the power that was bestowed upon Bali Maharaj. Brihaspati therefore advised Indra and his demigods, "O Indra, you and your soldiers cannot conquer the most powerful Bali. Not even God can conquer him, because now he's equipped with Brahma Teja." This is showing that by the mercy of Guru, Guru Kripa, a disciple can receive so much power to serve the Lord and benefit other people by preaching, distributing Krishna consciousness. What actually happened is Leela, although Bali Maharaj, he risked defying the orders of his guru, Shukracharya. As a result, he lost all his property. And because he was a devotee and expressed devotion to the Lord Vamanadeva, it said in the future, in the 8th Manvantara, he actually occupied the throne of Indra again. It's mentioned in one purport. And this is a summary of chapter 16. That Indra's mother, Aditi, who is the mother of the demigods, she was lamenting due to separation from her sons who were kicked out of the heavenly planet. Indra lost his heavenly kingdom. Mother Aditi approached her husband Kashyap, and she received from him instructions how to perform some austerity or perform a vrata called the Payalbrat, by doing which she could please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and receive from him a boon of a son who had actually arranged for Indra to get his kingdom back and defeat Bali Maharaj. So this chapter 16 is called Executing the Payalbrata, the Process of Worship. Kashyap Muni, the husband of Indra's mother, Aditi, and also Indra's father, he was away performing austerities. And when he came back, he saw that his wife was very unhappy. He was trying to inquire about the cause. Why was Aditi so unhappy? Was it possibly because she was not, there were some discrepancies in the principles of household life, some discrepancies in their religious practices or dharmart kama? And Prabhupada says in the purport, those that are householders, they should not think that dharma or religion is meant to improve the process of a householder's sense gratification, dharmart kama. Household life is actually meant for advancement in spiritual understanding, by which one can get liberation from material clutches. And Kashyap asked another reason that could possibly be a cause for the dissatisfaction. This is the second question, second cause of dissatisfaction or unhappiness. He said, "Oh, Aditi, did you fail to properly receive an uninvited guest, Atiti?" It's actually the duty of a householder to receive guests, even if the guest is an enemy. A seat and a glass of water is a minimal reception in order to not displease a guest. So displeasing a guest is another cause of being sad or unhappy or unsuccessful. Then Kashyap asked a third question, a third possible cause for his, her unhappiness of Aditi. He said, perhaps you did not offer oblations of ghee into the fire while I was away. And Prabhupada discusses in purported text 9 about fire yoga and sacrifice. It says in the Vedic system, a homa or fire yoga is held to offer ghee, grains, fruits and flowers, so the Vishnu may eat and be satisfied. And also, not only feeding Vishnu, but something called Brahman Bhojan. This is also recommended after the yajna. We're offering to Vishnu, Yajna Vai Vishnu. Then the prasad, mahaprasad, is distributed to the brahmanas, so they eat sumptuous food after the yajna. And by this, this is the second way that the Lord Himself eats, through the mouth of the brahmins. So this is the Vedic principle, that whenever there is a festival or homa or yajna, one should offer oblations into the fire, then distribute sumptuous food for the pleasure of the brahmanas. In this way, householder can be elevated to heaven and maintain its proper dharmic duties in the context of the Vedic religious system of Varnashram Dharma. Kashyap Muni describes the details of the Payavrata process to his wife. He says that this vow shall be performed in Phalgun month, February and March. This is a 12-day brat. And this vow, one will only drink milk. In the purport, Prabhupada just compares this Payavrata vow or austerity to Ekadasi, where he says Ekadasi, generally we don't eat grains, but it's generally recommended that one also fast the next day on Dwadasi by not consuming anything but milk. Of course, nowadays not too many people observe that. It's an interesting side point that this vow, Payavrata, was recommended to be performed for 12 days. This number 12 we see throughout the Vedic literature in the lives of saints, contemporary saints and great acharyas, and even the Lord in his pastimes. 12 is a very significant number. In Jyotishis, they say that 12 years represents a yuga or millennium for a human being. And every 12 years, there's a phase change or a shift in a person's life direction or mental attitude or behavior towards someone or his relationship with a particular school or institution or business or employer, or live in some place for 12 years and move, or work in some job for 12 years and leave. And Krishna in Dwarka Leela, he was defamed by Satyajit because his brother Prasena borrowed his Shamataka necklace, rode into the forest, was killed by a lion, and then a lion killed the... Then Jambavan came and killed the lion and took the jewel. And then Satyajit spread a rumor in Dwarka that Krishna had killed his brother in order to obtain the jewel. Krishna went with some elderly members of Dwarka to search for the actual cause of the disappearance of the jewel. He found the dead horse and the prasena. Then he followed the blood into the cave, and he told the elders to wait outside the cave while till he returned. And Krishna met Jambavan inside Rikshiraj, and they fought for many days, I think 28 days and nights. But the elders from Dwarka, they remained outside the cave and they waited patiently for Krishna's return for a total of 12 days. Because, as I said, this represents a special block of time special, significant period. Not 10 days, not 9 days, not 15 days, but 12 days is considered that they waited a millennium or a yuga. In other words, it was sufficient time. If they had left after 5 or 6 days, it wouldn't have looked good, or it wouldn't be convincing or conclusive. But they left after 12 without Krishna, assuming that he had perished inside the cave or met with an accident and died or whatever. Of course, God can never die. But they left after 12. So this, let's see everywhere. Yugayutam Dameshena. Lord Chaitanya was in Gambhir Leela. In the last 12 years of his 24 years coming and going and living in Puri, he was totally absorbed in Nirjan Bhajan within the confines of the Gambhira. And there, during those 12 years, he recited the Shikshastakam. And he said that a moment away from the Lord is like a yuga. Yugayitandamechina chakshusha pravishayidam. And his 12 years in the Gambhira was like a yuga also. So we're mentioning this. Aditi performed this payobrata for 12 days. And we may find this 12, when this 12 number comes up in our life, we've been initiated for 12 years, or we've been brahmacharis for 12 years, we may find some challenge to our ashram, or some challenge to our attitude or viewpoint. Then we have to re-examine our values or our viewpoint, worldview. Maybe take a new course or change of course. Or maybe that will happen automatically. There will be upheaval or disturbance in our otherwise peaceful life or peaceful job or peaceful relationship. So we should be aware of that fact and be prepared and not be surprised if something comes up when this number 12 appears in various combinations within our life. And commenting on some of the details of this payobrata, this is text 60. Ayam vai sarva yagyakya sarva vratam iti smritam tapasaram idam badre danam keshvara tarpanam. Kashyap Muni is telling his good wife, Mahabhagi, his greatly fortunate wife, Aditi, about the worship of the Supreme Personality of God at Keshav. And he said that this payobrata that you're performing is sarva yagya. It is equal to all kinds of religious rituals and sacrifices, all yagyas. In other words, it's the whole in one. This one brat, or yagya, or sacrifice, or puja, or worship, 12 days, austerities, this one sacrifice, by doing this, one can perform all other sacrifices automatically. He went on to say that his tapasaram is the essence of all austerities. Calls his wife, previous verse, he calls his wife Mahabhagi, greatly fortunate. Here he calls her Badri, oh good lady. And by this, doing this brat, one will please the Supreme Personality of God. It says here, danam keshvara tarpanam. This is the best act of charity, to please the Ishvara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Very interesting purport in this chapter 16, verse 60. In relation to this payobrata, Prabhupada compares the payobrata to ISKCON, this ancient worship that Aditi was doing of Lord Vishnu. He compares this Payavrata performance of Aditi in the Satya Yuga millions of years ago to the deity worship that is performed, the Vishnu Radhanam or puja or deity worship that is performed in ISKCON temples today in Kali Yuga 4 million years later. The ultimate goal of life, of course, is to please Vishnu, Haritoshanam. The worship of Vishnu, Vishnu Aradhyate. Prabhupada says the Krishna consciousness movement is also performing Vishnu Aradhanam, worship of Krishna, according to the age. Payavrata was done in Satya Yuga, and that was the worship of Vishnu. Now we're worshiping Vishnu in this age. So the Payavrata was enunciated long, long ago in Satya Yuga. But in Kali Yuga, now, and that was the past, but now in the present in Kali Yuga, the process accepted by ISKCON to open hundreds, and what is our process? The process of ISKCON is not to engage everybody in Payavrata, fasting from milk or drinking milk all day. But our process is to open hundreds. Prabhupada says that the process accepted by the Krishna Consciousness Movement, ISKCON, is to open hundreds and thousands of Vishnu temples to Radha and Krishna, Jagannath Balaram, Sitaram, Gauranitai, and so on. Performing deity worship in these temples is the same as, is as good as the Payavrata recommended here. But in our ISKCON, Lord Vishnu is worshipped in every temple, not just for 12 days. Prabhupada makes this distinction. There's something similar and something different. There's some similarities between our ISKCON deity worship and Aditi's performance of the Payavrata. The difference is, she only did 12 days Vishnu Radhanam during her Payavrata. But ISKCON and all our temples around the world, our Vishnu Radhanam is Chobis Ganta Radhanam. Chobis Ganta Vishnu Radhanam. 24 hours a day, the Prophet says. But he says, okay, Aditi performed her Payavrata for 12 days and did Vishnu Radhanam. But in our Krishna conscious movement, ISKCON, Lord Vishnu is worshipped in every temple according to a schedule of 24 hours of engagement in performing kirtan, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, offering palatable food and distributing this food to Vaishnavas and others. If members of the Krishna conscious movement, which means members of ISKCON, if they stick to these principles, these three principles of Vishnu Radhanam, 24-hour kirtan, it's very interesting. In this purport, 8th Canto, chapter 16, verse 60, Prabhupada is saying, ISKCON means Akhanda Kirtan. ISKCON means the Krishna Consciousness Movement. There's three principles that should be followed in all ISKCON temples. He's saying here, to repeat, in our Krishna Consciousness Movement, which is ISKCON, Lord Vishnu is worshipped in every temple according to a schedule of 24 hours of gate, according to a schedule of 24 hours engagement in performing kirtan. So that means Chobis Ganta Akhanda Kirtan, Akhanda Harinam Kirtan. So he said, if we carry out these three principles, if we stick to these, we will get the result one gains by observing the Payavrata ceremony. That result is the pleasure of the Lord, the happiness of God, Krishna. So one principle Prabhupada is saying that we should all stick to, that we, all the members of ISKCON, in all the temples of ISKCON, we should stick to these three principles. And it seems, one can say or draw the conclusion from this verse that these, if we, the Prabhupada would like us to stick to these three principles. One, every temple should have Akhanda Kirtan, 24 hours chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Two, we should be offering palatable foodstuffs to Lord Vishnu. And then we should be distributing this Mahaprasadam to the Vaishnavas and to the public, to others. Akhanda Kirtan, 24 hours. You could also say that we should have 24 hours Hare Krishna Mahamantra Kirtan in every temple, and 24 hours offering food to the Lord, and 24 hours distributing Mahaprasadam to the Vaishnavas and the public. Mahaprasad ki jai. Prabhupada goes on, thus the essence of all auspicious activities, such as performing yajna, giving in charity, observing brat, and undergoing austerities, is actually included in the Krishna consciousness movement. Now, this is Prabhupada's tika, or very much contemporary and enlightened commentary on the individual words of this verse, which says, sarva yajna, sarva vratam, tapasaram, danam cheshvara tarpanam. Kashyap Muni is telling to his wife, his Bhadre, his auspicious wife, Aditi, that these acts of charity are pleasing to the Lord. The acts of performing sarva yajna, this pile brata is a yajna, it's the essence of all yajnas. It's a brata, it's the essence of all bratas. And it's an austerity, it's the essence. Tapasaram, it's the essence of austerities. So Prabhupada is saying that in our temples we are doing, all of our ISKCON temples, the members are conducting simultaneously all three of these activities, which Aditi performed millions of years ago. And by performing all three of these activities, we are pleasing the Lord, Sri Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sarva yajna, sarva vrata tapasaram, because we're doing the sacrifice of nam yajna, yajna sankirtana prayer. Because in Kali Yuga, we should perform the sankirtan yajna. One should follow this process continuously. And we're performing the supreme tapasya. Very wonderful verse, 8th canto, chapter 16, verse 60. Prabhupada compares the pile brata to ISKCON, nam sankirtan, puja, and prasad distribution. Chapter 17 describes how Lord Vishnu appears as Vamanadeva. The word Vaman means 52 inches. Vaman, ek Vaman or something like this in Hindi, means 52. Lord Vamanadeva was considered to be a dwarf Brahman. He was 52 inches tall, which is 4 feet 4 inches tall. Krishna was pleased, very pleased, by the Payalbrata ceremony of Aditi, and because of this he agreed to appear before her in full opulence. So he became her son. Lord Vishnu, in the form of Vamanadeva, one of the Das avatars, appeared as his son. In the verse on commentary on 8th canto, chapter 17, verse 1, it's told that Aditi was the ideal disciple or follower of her Guru Pati, her husband Kashyap Muni, acting as her guru. And she very strictly followed his instruction. And the word that describes here strictly is atandrita. Atandrita means without any laziness. She was very diligent and determined and controlled. So therefore she was successful and carrying out his orders and his instructions, and she got the result of her brata, her austerity, her tapa, her puja, her radnam. Her wish was to have the Lord come as her son, and bring back her son Indra, and the demigods restore them, return their kingdom to them, which was taken over by Bali Maharaj. And Prabhupada explains that this point is relevant to all of us. Prabhupada uses Aditi and compares her to the ideal disciple in relationship to his guru, or in her case, the guru was the Gurupati Kashyap. Prabhupada says, for advancement in anything, especially in spiritual life, one must strictly follow the bona fide instructions of the teacher. One should have complete faith in the guru who helps the disciple make progress in spiritual life. As soon as the disciple thinks independently, not caring for the instructions of the spiritual master, he is a failure. Aditi was the classic example of the ideal disciple following her guru, husband, Kashyap. And by her strict following, she was successful. So the implication is that this is the cause for success in spiritual life. If a disciple wants to be successful in his sadhana bhakti, come to bhava and prema, they should strictly follow the order of the spiritual master with great faith and not act lazily or independently, have his own idea or own will, because that will not produce any success. There are some prayers that Aditi offers to Lord Vamanadeva when he appears. Interesting to note also, it says when Vamanadeva appeared, it describes his form, and it says that he was, one verse it describes as he was sham color. Of course, the painting on the cover of the Bhagavatam shows him as being golden color. But the verse in translation, 8th canto, says he was sham, he was dark color. Maybe in a later chapter. In verse 9 of chapter 17, Prabhupada is talking in relationship to Aditi's prayer. He says, when one surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he surpasses the influence of the illusory energy. Why or how? Because the Supreme Lord, who is fully wise and situated in the heart of everyone, especially in a devotee's heart, he gives one intelligence by which one is sure never to fall into illusion. And this is how the Krishna actually personally helps his devotee from the vantage point inside his heart. Being situated in everyone's heart, especially his devotees, Krishna is always ready to help his devotees in adversity. Since Krishna knows everything, he knows how things are to be adjusted, and he does the needful to relieve the suffering of his devotee. Probably explains that point in text 12 purport. In chapter 18, Lord Vamanadeva, the dwarf incarnation, he appeared and he entered the sacrificial arena of Maharaj Bali, who received him well and fulfilled his desire by offering him benedictions. Here it describes in text 2, it says, Shamavadatto Jashavraja Kundala Trishola Satri Varadambujapuman Srivatsavaksha Balayanga Dola Sat Kirita Kanchi Gunacharu Nupura. Describes the form of Vamanadeva, says Sham Avadatta, whose body is blackish and free from inebriety. This verse in 18th chapter of 8th canto, text 2, indicates that he was dark, sham color, like Krishna or Vishnu. The body of the Supreme Personality of God is blackish in complexion, was free from any defects. His lotus face, decorated with earrings, Makara Kundala, appeared very beautiful. And Srivats was on his chest, bangles on his wrist armlets, on his arms, golden helmet, and belt on his waist, and sacred thread across his chest, and ankle bells decorating his lotus feet. This is a description of Lord Vamanadeva as he appeared in Indraloka before Bali Maharaj. How the picture of Vamanadeva on the cover, and he's golden, that I can't understand. But that's there. Actually, when Vamanadeva appeared from the womb of his mother Aditi, he appeared in the form of Narayan, with four hands equipped with the necessary symbolic weapons. Then he immediately transformed himself into a brahmachari. So this is proof that Vamanadeva's body is not material. That's a comment on his birth. Doesn't say that. Still, when he appeared later, he was in this dark shamrang color as a young brown boy. Bali welcomes him and offers him so much nice words. In chapter 19, Lord Vamanadeva begs charity from Bali Maharaj. This chapter describes how Vamanadeva asked for three steps of land and charity. And Bali agreed, but his guru, Shukracharya, forbade him to fulfill Vamanadeva's request. So someone may wonder that Krishna, Lord Vishnu, or Vamanadeva, he's the Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, which is told in Bhagavad Gita. He's the proprietor of all the planets and all the spiritual, material world. So why should he be in want of land? Why is he begging three steps of land? But Lord Vamanadeva approached Bali not for his welfare, but for the welfare of his devotees. Devotees sacrifice all their personal interests to satisfy the Supreme Lord. And similarly, Krishna, although having no personal interests, can do anything for the interests of his devotees. One who is full in himself has no personal interests. This is a very interesting point, the Prabhupada says. One who is full in himself has no personal interests. This is the definition of someone who can be truly unselfish, free from selfishness. Because Krishna described that he's aptakam and atmaram, satisfied and blissful, pleased within himself, and he has no desire to fulfill. He's not pushed or forced or impelled by any lack or desire within himself, or unfulfilled ambition or want within himself. He's satisfied and not, so he can actually be a person of who's only interested in others, only can truly care for others, because he has no personal interest to take or to receive or to exploit anyone. So when one is full in himself, or full in Krishna consciousness, then you have no personal interest, and you can help others be interested in them. And in verse 24, Vamanadeva is preaching, giving instructions to Bali Maharaj about being happy, how one should be satisfied with whatever he receives by destiny. And Vamanadeva says, if one is not self-controlled, he'll never be happy, even if he owns the three worlds. Prabhupada talks in his purport about super senses. Very interesting idea. We have our Panchgyanindriya, Panchkaramindriya, our five knowledge acquiring senses, and our five working senses, which make the 10 senses, and then the mind, 11 senses. But there's something Prabhupada refers to as super senses, which is the where one finds true and lasting permanent eternal happiness through the super senses. What are the super senses? Where can one find the super senses? Because if one contacts and starts functioning through his super senses, he'll find the real happiness, which is described in Bhagavad Gita 6:21. Sukham atyantikam yat tad buddhi grayam atindriyam veti yatra nachayavayam stitashchalati tatvata. In a spiritually joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. Now this experience, transcendental joy, divine bliss, Prabhupada explains that this comes through the super senses. One has to perceive happiness by the super senses. The super senses are not the senses of the material body. Every one of us is a spiritual being, an individual person. Our senses are covered by material elements. Because of ignorance, we consider the material senses that cover us to be our real senses. The real senses, the super senses, are within the material covering. Within the covering of the material senses are the spiritual senses. When the spiritual senses are uncovered by these senses, the spiritual senses or super senses, we can be happy. Satisfaction of the spiritual senses is described in the Padma Puran. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. When the super senses are engaged in devotional service or Rishikesh, then the senses are completely satisfied. Without this superior knowledge of sense gratification, one may try to satisfy his material senses, but happiness will never be possible. Well, here in the purport of chapter 19, verse 25, Prabhupada is speaking in very convincing and absolute terms, saying that in essence, material sense happiness and the pursuit of happiness through our material senses and body will never be successful. It will never work. We'll always fall short and leave us discontent. By trying to satisfy our material senses, happiness will never be possible. Of course, we're not convinced, and we keep trying, and we keep failing, and we keep trying, and we keep failing, trying, failing, trying, failing. We don't learn the point. We don't realize the fact. If one is not trained to satisfy the spiritual senses, the super senses, and continues in material sense gratification, he will never obtain happiness that is eternal and blissful. Tapo devyam puchakayena sattvam shudyed yasmad brahma sokyam tvanantam. one must practice austerity so that his existential position will be purified and he will achieve unlimited, blissful life. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Later in verse 32 of chapter 19, Shukracharya preaches to his disciple Bali Maharaj to warn him. Esha te stanam aishvaryam shriyam tejo yasha shrutam dasyat yachidya shakraya maya manavako hari. This person falsely appearing as a brahmachari is actually the supreme personality of Godhead, Hari. Maya manavako hari. In other words, Hari has taken a mayak form. At least that's what Shukracharya thinks. As a man, a man, manavako. That's what the demons or materialists, impersonalists think, that when God takes a form, it's maya. Avajanti mamuda manushim dharmashritam. They don't understand that Krishna's form is Satchidananda, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha. His Vigraha Tanu Vapu Rupam is always transcendental, Satchidananda. Whether he's a child or a baby or a dwarf or a lion or a turtle or a fish or a pig, that form is transcendental. He's referring here, Shukracharya refers to God as Hari. Vishnu Chakravarti in his purport, he explains about Hari. The word Hari means one who takes away. What does he take away? If one connects himself with the Supreme Personality of God at Hari, Lord Hari takes away all the devotee's miseries. And in the beginning, Lord Hari also superficially appears to take away all his possessions, reputation, education, and beauty, as is told later in Bhagavatam, in the 88th chapter, verse 8, Yasyaha managri nami harishyeta dhanam shane, which is Lord speaking to Maharaj Yudhisthira. O King, the first installment of my mercy toward the devotee is that I take away all his possessions, especially his material opulence, his money. So that's the verse, Prabhupada comments. If a sincere devotee wants Krishna above everything, but at the same time is attached to material possessions, which hinder his spiritual advancement, Krishna, by tactics, will take away all his possessions. If one delivers his mind to Krishna, one can naturally sacrifice everything to satisfy him. Bali Maharaj was a devotee, but he was actually attached to his power, position, possessions. So the kind-hearted Lord, to favor his devotee, appeared especially to favor him, take away all his material possessions and his mind as well. Firstly, the word Hari means to take away our miseries. I like this point in the purport. Hari means the Lord. The Lord. Hari means that aspect or that form or feature of God that takes away all the miseries of his devotees. Without God, without God consciousness, without awareness and the service of Krishna, our lives are miserable. So much anxiety, so much hankering, lamenting, so much disturbance, no peace, no inner joy, no hope, satisfaction. And maybe he takes away money, or your reputation, friends, whatever. But the main thing is that Krishna gives us his love and his eternal engagement, which is the perfection of happiness, joy, and fulfillment. Shukracharya was worried because he was self-interested. He was not interested, as we heard earlier, if someone is satisfied with and fulfilled within themselves, then they have no personal interest. Shukracharya was dependent on Bali Maharaj's patronage. Bali Maharaj was his jajaman. Shukracharya was the family priest, guru advisor, the Purohit. So he was, this is the example of a selfish person. The Smartha Brahman. Shukracharya is the classic Smartha Brahman attached to Vedas, Karmakanda, material pleasure and elevation, sense gratification. So he was afraid if his jajaman, if his supporter, if his life member, Bali Maharaj, offered all of his possessions to this Vamanadeva, then that would cause havoc, not only to the king, but to the family of Shukracharya, who depended on Bali's mercy, or let's say Bali's money. So this is the difference between a Vaishnava and a Smartha Brahman. Smartha Brahman is always selfish, interested in material profit. But a Vaishnava is not selfish. He's unselfish. He's not selfish. He's not self-interested. He's interested only in satisfying Krishna. It was very clear that Shukracharya was only interested in personal gain. Later, Shukracharya is explaining about how the Shastras say that money should be divided into five parts: dharma, artha, kam, fame, and family members. Dakfa. That's the key, dakfa. D-A-K-F-F. Five. D for dharma. Money or assets or wealth should be divided. One who's in full knowledge should divide his wealth into five parts. D for dharma, A for art, K for kam, F for fame, and F for family members. So this is dakfa. One part of our wealth should be used for religion, dharma. One part for reputation or fame. One part for opulence, wealth, art. One part for sense gratification, kam, and one part to maintain the family members. At the present, however, people are ignorant. They spend all their money for the satisfaction of their family. Rupa Goswami taught by his own example. He divided his wealth into three divisions. 50% used for Krishna, 25% for himself, and 25% for his family members. So this is enjoined in Shastras that, of course, family members are expecting some profit from the breadwinner, the father or husband, whomever. So therefore, one follows a Shastra and gives a portion, at least one-fifth, to the family, the wife and children, mother and father, etc. But nowadays, they give everything. Even the classic stories are there. You meet different husbands, fathers, men, etc. Preach to them about giving a donation to ISKCON for building a temple or distributing books or cow protection, care for cows, life adoption program, 1.5 lakhs, maintain a cow for life after life after life. But they say, oh, Swamiji, I work My duty here is I work. And when I get my money, I get the paycheck, I come home and I give it, I hand it over to my wife. And her duty, my duty is to work, make the money, her duty is to spend it. So I don't have any money. I work, I give all the money to my wife. So this is five-fifths, 100% given for family maintenance. Nothing for fame, nothing for wealth, nothing for religion. And this is the problem in Kali Yuga. Chapter 19 closes with the last instruction of Shukracharya, the guru. He's teaching his disciple. So this last verse or last instruction or shiksha, guru shiksha of Shukracharya to Bali Maharaj, he tells him that there's no problem with lying. He outlined the standard for lying. The guru taught his disciple the lying standard, five different circumstances where one can lie. He can lie to a woman, he can lie in marriage, lie in business, lie in times of danger, lie to protect a cow, to protect a Brahmin, and save one's life. He says, Strishu Narma Vivahe Cha Vrityarte Prana Sankate Go Brahman Arte Himsayam Nanritam Syaj Jugupsitam. Translation, in flattering a woman to bring her under control, in joking, in a marriage ceremony, in earning one's livelihood, when one's life is in danger, to protect cows in Brahminical culture, or to protect a person from an enemy's hand, falsity is never condemned. It seems in this verse, Shukracharya is outlining to his disciples seven circumstances when a person can lie, and according to him it says there's na anritam, there's no falsity is never condemned, there's nothing wrong with lying in these seven circumstances. One, strishu, one can lie to encourage a woman and bring her under control. Number two, narma, one can lie in the course of joking. Three, vivahe or vivaha, one can lie in a marriage ceremony. Vritti arte, one can lie for the purpose of maintaining one's livelihood, as in business. Actually, it's eight. There's eight different times or circumstances where one can lie. Strishu, one. Narma, two. Vivaha, three. Vritti arte, business, four. Prana sankate, protect one's life or pran, five. Six. Go Brahman arte, to protect a cow, or to protect a Brahmin or Brahminical culture. That's six and seven. Number eight, himsayam, ayam. This is you can lie to protect a person who is going to be killed because of enmity. So it's interesting how chapter 19 concludes with verse 43. Shukracharya explains to his disciple Bali Maharaj that he should lie to Vamanadeva or not promise him or whatever. Eight different circumstances where one can lie. It's alright to lie to Vamanadeva according to Shukracharya. But then chapter 20, it describes just the opposite. Srimad Bhagavatam and the Dharma Shastra is quite opposite of what Shukracharya is saying. They're saying that lying is sinful. So in this chapter 20, it's called Bali Maharaj Surrenders the Universe. Even though he understood that Vaman was cheating him, Bali gave everything to the Lord in charity. And then Lord Vamanadeva manifested a huge body, gigantic form of Vishnu, and took over the whole universe. And Bali Maharaj, let's start the verse. Very interesting, in the verse 1, chapter 20, after Shukracharya instructed Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj was silent for some time. Tushnim bhutva shanam rajan. He observed a moment of silence. The Acharya asked this question, why was he silent? Because he was deliberating on this order of Shukracharya. He was thinking, should I refuse the order and go against the order of my guru? Or should I independently do everything to please Krishna or God? So he was taking some time, waiting for some confirmation from the Super Soul. He was also contemplating about the two different types of gurus. There's Pravritti Mara Guru and the Vritti Mara Guru. Pravritti Mara Guru takes the disciple on the path of Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. But then the Vritti Mara Guru takes the disciple on the path of Bhakti, eternal loving service of the Lord. Prabhupada explains when one should reject a guru. Anyone who is supposed to be a guru, but who goes against the principles of Vishnu Bhakti, cannot be accepted as a guru. If one has falsely accepted such a guru, one should reject him. Jiva Goswami says, a useless guru, such as a family priest who acts as a guru, should be given up, and a bona fide guru should be taken. A bona fide guru means a Vishnu Bhakta, one who will teach someone about the science of Krishna consciousness. And text 4, Bali Maharaj replies to his guru and actually preaches to him, because his last instruction of Shukracharya was teaching Bali Maharaj to lie in 8 different circumstances. Bali said, na yasatyat paro adharmo. He says that compulsion to untruthfulness, asatyam, is para adharma. He's saying, Bali replies to the teaching of his guru and says, there is nothing more sinful than untruthfulness. He's saying, asatya, untruthfulness. In other words, lying is the most sinful activity. It's para adharma. It's the topmost adharma. And then Bali Maharaj goes on. He said, because of this, Mother Earth once said, I can bear anything, heavy thing, Himalayas, mountains, or anything, but I can't bear the weight of a person who is a liar. Of course, in Kali Yuga, lying is a common affair. Even in the most common dealings, people are accustomed to speaking so many lies. No one is free from the sinful reactions of speaking lies. Under the circumstances, one can just imagine how this lying propensity has overburdened Mother Earth and indeed the entire universe. That's certainly a fact in Kali Yuga, which is predicted in the 12th canto. Mayeva vyavaharike. That everyone will be a liar. And Bali Maharaj was thinking that although his guru was advising him, he thought that it would actually be quite improper and wrong to withdraw his promise to with a brahmachari. To lie or fail to honor a promise given to a brahmachari is never proper, for lying is the most sinful activity. As Prabhupada said, lying has become commonplace in modern society. Even in the most common dealings, people are accustomed to speaking so many lies. According to Shastra, lying is para adharma, asatyam. Untruthfulness or lying is considered the most sinful. Adharma is the topmost irreligious activity. Because the Shastras say we should be prepared to tell the truth even to an enemy. In his preaching, to his turn preaching to his guru, Bali Maharaj is explaining about the great saintly people of the past who gave everything, sacrificed everything to benefit the people, Shibi and Dadichi. Prabhupada cites in the purport, Janaka Pandit says that since our money and possessions do not last, but will somehow or other be taken away, as long as they're in our possession, it's better to use them for charity to a noble cause. So because of this, Bali Maharaj decided to defy the order of his so-called spiritual master. In other words, give charity now. Why wait? Because tomorrow may be too late. Charity should always be performed. Prabhupada said, a Brahman, dadati pratigrinati, giving gifts, receiving gifts, yajan yajan, dan pratigra, patan patan, sadkarma nipana vipro. That a vipro, a Brahman, is expert in six activities: Bhagavat pat, studying the Bhagavatam and teaching others the Bhagavatam, patan patan, yajan yajan, performing yajna, puja, didi puja, archanam, homa, dasavita samskaras and yajnas, and in teaching others how to do the same. Dan pratigraha, receiving gifts and also in charity and money, land, cows, grains, food, cloth, and also distributing the same. Srila Prabhupada said that a Brahmin may receive $1,000,000 in charity in the morning, and by the evening he distributes it all. He doesn't hold on to anything. He doesn't hoard his wealth or gloat over his wealth. He immediately distributes charity as the highest exemplar in the society. In chapter 21, it describes how Bali Maharaj agreed to give Vamanadeva 3 steps of land, and the Lord took everything in 2 steps, and he wasn't able to offer more. So then the Lord bound him with the Varuna Pash, the ropes of Varuna. Because he couldn't fulfill his promise, so the Lord bound him, sent him to Sutala Loka. He went from the heavenly planets to the hellish planets. There's 7 planets above the earth: Bhur Bhuva Swa, Janalok, Mahalok, Tapalok, Satyalok. And there's 7 planets below the earth: Atala, Patala, Rasatala, Patala, Sutala. There's the 7 planets, the subterranean planets. And one, he was on the top and he went to the bottom. What goes up must come down. A rise precedes a fall. One who goes up must come down. When Vamanadeva stuck his foot through the top of the universe, and Brahma bathed his foot with his kamandalu. Vamanadeva is known as Urukram, a wonderful actor. So this water that came off of his feet became transformed in the Ganga. In chapter 21, text 4, Vishnu Chakravarti describes three origins of the Ganga. One is the water that washed the feet of Vamanadeva by Brahma's Kamandalu. And the second origin is in the fifth canto. The Ganga began when Vamanadeva's left foot pierced the covering of the universe, because at that time the causal ocean, the Karna Samudra, leaked through and entered this universe and became known as the Ganga. And the third cause of the Ganga, origin of the Ganga, is that Lord Narayan himself appeared as the water of the Ganga. Therefore, the water of the Ganga is a combination of three transcendental waters. And because of this, the Ganga is Narayan, the Ganga is Karna Samudra, and the Ganga is Vamanadeva Charanamrita. Because of this, the Ganga is able to purify the three worlds. In text 5, it describes this expansion of Lord Vamanadeva. So there's two leelas going on here, Aishwarya Mayi Leela and Madhurya Mayi Leela. From the small form, we went to the big form, back to the small form. First, Vamanadeva expanded himself to the universal form, Viratarup. Then he reduced himself to his original form, Vamanarup. Thus he acted like Lord Krishna, with the request of Arjuna, showed his vast, gigantic Viratarup, universal form, and later assumed his original form, Duibhuj Krishna. The point Prabhupada makes in the purport, the Lord can assume any form he likes. So Vamanadeva resumed his original form and human-like form to reciprocate in love and accept worship from his devotees. So Madhurya Mayi Leela, this is Nara Leela, where the Lord is approachable, he's near to us. His form is human-like in proportion to the human beings, not some vast, gigantic, untouchable, inconceivable, unthinkable form, distant, vast, omnipotent form, full of power and opulence. This form is not very sweet, not very accessible, but in Madhurya Mayi Leela and Nara Leela, human-like, Nararup, Vamanarup, it's only 4 feet, 4 inches tall. It's easy to be near the Lord. It's easy to touch the Lord, relate to the Lord, speak to the Lord, worship and serve the Lord in a very sweet and intimate and confidential way. And in this form, the Lord accepts the personal loving worship of his devotees. So in order to reciprocate with his devotees' worship, Lord Brahma wanted to worship Lord Vamanadeva. So to accept that worship, he abandoned his Aishwarya Mayi form of Viratarup and adopted his Madhurya Mayi Vaman dwarf form, the dwarf Brahman, so he could accept the worship of Lord Brahma. Very interesting point in text 8, and mentions some of the different personalities that were taking part in the Vamana Puja along with Brahma. And one of them was a character named Jambavan, who is the Riksha Rajatu, the king in the form of a bear, or the king of the bears, Balu Raj. This Jambavan is described that he serves the Lord throughout three yugas. This description here in 8th canto, chapter 21, verse 8, describes that Jambavan as serving the Lord in Satyuga, serving Lord Vamanadeva in his Bali Maharaj Vaman Leela. What is he doing? It says that he's joining in the ceremony, sounding his bugle in all directions. He declared a great festival for Lord Vamanadeva's victory. apparently he's Beri Shabde. Beri is some type of bugle, which apparently it's his bugle, and he blew it loud and clear to announce the Maha Utsav in all the directions. Sarvadikshu. Again, Jambavan appears in Treta Yuga and Ram Leela. He assists Ram. He's one of the bears that join all the monkeys, Sugriva and Hanuman, to attack Lanka and fight with Ram on behalf of Ram against Ravana to retrieve Sita Devi. Jambavan is there in Treta Yuga. Then again, Jambavan comes into Dwapara Yuga and Krishna Leela. So Jambavan is in Vamana's Leela and Satyuga, Ram's Leela, Krishna's Leela. And Krishna Leela, he fights with Krishna over the Shamantaka jewel in Dwarka, outside of Dwarka, Satyajit's jewel. And then he realizes after 28 days that he can't win, and the Lord can't win either, but Jambavan's getting so tired. So he realizes that none other but his Lord Ram can defeat him. So he recognizes Ram and Lord Krishna and feels very happy and thrilled and awards Krishna the Shamataka jewel, and then also happily bequeaths his daughter Jambavati to Dwarkadish. Krishna happily accepts the jewel and the jewel-like daughter Jambavati, and she becomes one of the principal queens of Krishna and Dwarka. So in this way, Jambavan also serves in Dwapara Yuga. When Bali Maharaj did this, surrendered to the Lord, became bound with the Lord, then all of his demoniac allies and soldiers, they became very angry with his surrender, and then they raised their weapons and attacked the Lord, the associates of the Lord. All the associates, the bodyguards or the personal associates of the Lord, they were just smiling. The Lord at that time, Lord Vamanadeva, was surrounded by his associates who were the gatekeepers of the seven gates of Vaikuntha. There are seven gates entering Vaikuntha Dham, each planet, Vaikuntha. The planet has seven gates. Like the old cities in India, they had different gates. If you go to Mathura, there's Holy Gate, there's Dig Gate. There are different gates there, big arches, and there used to be seven walls around the city. Or you go to Ranganath in South India, there are different gates or Gopurams and walls surrounding the temple. At each one of these seven gates of Vaikuntha, there are two gatekeepers. So at this time, in Indraloka, Vamanadeva was surrounded by 14 gatekeepers, and these 14 gatekeepers, they were smiling when they saw the demoniac associates of Bali attacking the Lord, so they immediately raised their weapons, attacked these enemies of the Lord, Bali's demoniac soldiers. Naga Ayutya Pran, that each one of these gatekeepers of Vaikuntha, they were as strong as 10,000 elephants. They're like Maharatis, Atiratis. Then the first gate of Vaikuntha is protected by Nanda and Sunanda. And the second gate is Jai and Vijay. Or maybe Jai and Vijay are at the first gate, I'm not sure. But the different gates, in one gate there's Sanda and Sunanda. At another gate there's Jai and Vijay. At one gate there is Prabala and Bala. Another gate there is Kamud and Kamudaksha. Another gate there is Vishwaksena and Patat Trirat, who is Garuda. Another gate there is Jayanta and Shrutadev. And another gate there is Pushpadanta and Satvata. So these 14 devotees, they killed all these soldiers of the demons. Bali Maharaj saw all of his soldiers being killed, Then he preached to them. He said, listen, this is not a good time. The time is not favoring us right now. Providence is not in our favor. We won't be victorious here. Everyone should stop. But somehow the demoniac soldiers came to their senses, and they stopped attacking the Lord and stopped being killed by the Lord's gatekeepers. Chapter 22 is Bali Maharaj surrenders his life. Vamanadeva, Lord Vamanadeva was pleased by the behavior of Bali Maharaj. Then he placed him on the planet Sutala. And agreed, in the introduction here, it says he agreed to become his doorman. I didn't see the word doorman in the Sanskrit, but that term is generally told. Sanskrit said that he lived with him or was an associate of Bali. Maybe somewhere it says he was a doorman. Anyway, he was there. So this is chapter 13. He surrenders his life. That's all he had left. He promised 3 steps, and 2 steps, all he owned was taken away. So Bali Maharaj starts preaching about, in this verse 9 of chapter 22, Bali Maharaj describes 7 useless things. Kim atmana nena chahatiyon tata kim rikta hare swajanakya dasyubi kim jayaya samsriti hetu bhutaya mardyasya gehe kim hihayisho vyaya. Throughout the verse, he says, kim, kim, kim. What is the use, what is the use, what is the use of these various items he lists in sequence? He lists 7 useless things. What is the use of this? What is the use of that? Translation. What is the use of this material body? Kimatmanena anena. Which automatically leaves the owner at the end of life. What is the use of one's family members? Swajana. Who are actually plunderers taking away money that is useful for the service of the Lord. What is the use of a wife? She's only the source of increasing material conditions. What is the use of family, home, country, and community? They are all useless things. Wife is useless. This body is useless. One's money and wealth is useless. One's family is useless. One's home is useless. One's very place of birth, his country, is useless. And one's city, nation, one's city, village, community is useless. Why are they all useless? Because attachment for these things wastes the valuable energy of one's lifetime. Ayusha vyaya, simply wasting the duration of life. Prabhupada explains how such a statement by Bali Maharaj is extremely frightening to a materialistic person. He becomes horrified to hear such fierce words, ferocious, exaggerated preaching. Prabhupada says, the common man does not appreciate such a statement because he thinks that during his lifetime, his family, society, country, body, and relatives are everything. Why should one give up any of them and take shelter of God? Bali Maharaj understood that surrendering to the Lord is the right action for an intelligent person. his grandfather, Bali's grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, did the same thing that he did. He took shelter of Vishnu, Lord Nrisimhadev, against the will of his father. Similarly, Bali took shelter of the Lord, Vamanadeva, against the will of his guru, Sukracharya, and all the leading demons. We should not use the body for any other purpose but advancing in devotional service. If we do that, use the body for material enjoyment or material purposes, we're simply wasting time. For as soon as the time is ripe, the soul will automatically leave the body. We are very interested in society, friendship and love. But what are they? Those in the garb of friends and relatives merely plunder the hard-earned money of the bewildered soul. Chapter 22, Bali Maharaj surrenders his life. Verse 14 describes how Bali was bound by the ropes of Varuna, then he hung his head. Hung his head down. Then why did he hang his head down? Because at that time his grandfather came to that assembly, Prahlad Maharaj. The verse 14 says that because he could not offer respect, befitting respect to Prahlad, he simply bent his head down, his eyes being inundated with tears, and his face lowered in shame. Bali actually felt that he was an offender to Vamanadeva. He was ashamed and hung his head. So Bali Maharaj says he bowed his head, not really to show respect, but he bowed his head because of shame for the offense. He was ashamed in front of his grandfather that he made such an offensive. Not being able to please the Lord. This feeling of shame is very important. Sometimes devotees offend one another, or we may offend God. If we realize that, we should feel ashamed of our behavior and very repentive and sorrowful. Immediately rectify that situation. One purport later, verse 16, the prophet says that the Lord bestows his mercy upon his devotee by helping him find out his constitutional position. For that purpose, the Lord is always ready to help the devotee in every way. So the context here of the one meaning is, of prophet's purport, is that material opulence and possessions, position was a problem, an obstacle for the free flow and movement of Bali Maharaj's devotion towards Vishnu. He was attached to being sitting in Indra's post. So to favor him and restore him to his position, constitutional position, Jivara Sarupaya Krishna Nityadas, as Krishna's eternal servant, Lord Vamanadeva took away all that wealth and position. But in an inner meaning of this word, this verse, we could apply this to Raghunuga Bhakti, that our constitutional position means our sthayi bhav, and Krishna will help in every way. Bali Maharaj, in verse 19, Bali Maharaj's wife, Vindhyavali, she was very agitated and afraid when she saw, and aggrieved when she saw how her husband had been arrested and tied by the Varuna Pash, by Garuda, under the order of Vamanadeva. She folded her hands Pranjali, folded her hands, and she spoke a verse, which is a very interesting verse. Chapter 22, verse 20. She said, "Oh my Lord Vamanadev, you have created the entire universe for the enjoyment of your personal pastimes." In this verse, she's saying that this material world is created for Leela, Srishti Leela, Krita Artam. Art means objective, value, wealth, attainment, purpose, sake of. So Krita Artha means the sake or purpose of Leela, Atmana, Artam Atmana, Idam Chigat Kritam. This Tri Jagat, Bhurvavaswa, all these lower, middle, and upper planetary systems. Atara, this is a Krita, like we say, Rasa Krita in Bhagavatam. Rasa Krita means the pastimes of the Rasa dance, or Jal Krita. Sometimes they say Jal Keli in Bengali. But in Sanskrit, they say Jal Krita, water sporting or water splashing, water pastimes of Radha and Krishna and Radhakund, or Jamuna, or Prem Sarovar, or whatever, wherever. Kridartam. This material world is the Lord comes to this world to describe, to display His divine pastimes, to attract the conditioned souls to the sweetness of His Nara Leela, especially His Braj Leela. He comes once in a day of Brahma to attract those fortunate souls that can avail themselves to this pastime by seeing it directly in Boma Vrindavan, Prakat Leela, or hearing about it, coming in contact with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sampradaya, which is specifically broadcasting the Leelas of Braj, Braj Bhakti, through the writings and teachings of Raghunuga Bhakti and Braja Prema Bhakti. Why was the material created? For Krita, for the sake of pastimes. This is the pastime place, Mahavishnu's Leela Stali, the material world. He creates this material creation and glances at the creation and enters into the creation, every universe, as Siradakshaya Vishnu, and enters into the heart of every jiva who is expanded from his glance, the tusta jivas, jiva shakti. And he's sitting there side by side waiting to engage in pastimes with all the living entities. This is a very interesting concept about the, which Vindhyavali is mentioning here, Bali Maharaj's intelligent wife. Kridartam atmanamidam tri jagat kritam. O Lord Vamanadev, Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan, this material creation, you have created the entire universe for the enjoyment of your personal pastimes. And often people suffering in the material world, they say, "Why am I here? What is this?" Well, it's Leela, Srishti Leela, the creation Leela. And this idea is also described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jiva Dharma, chapter 16, Parmeya, Jivas, and Maya. Vajranath asks his guru, Vajranath says, "If Krishna is so merciful, compassionate, Krunamaya, why did he make the jiva so weak and so minute with independence that he could become entangled in Maya?" His guru answers, "It's true that Krishna is Karunamaya, overflowing with mercy, but Krishna is also Leela Purushottam, Leela Maya, filled with the desire to perform pastimes. Desiring different pastimes, as this verse is saying in Bhagavatam, kridartam atmana idam jagatkritam. Desiring different pastimes to be enacted in different situations, Sri Krishna trains the jiva to be capable in all conditions, from the marginal state, tatastha, to the highest state of mahabhav. To facilitate the jiva's progressing practically towards becoming qualified to serve the Lord, Krishna has also created the lower levels of material existence, the material world, beginning from the lowest inert matter up to ahankara. Having fallen from their constitutional position, jivas are entangled in maya or opposed to Krishna and engrossed in personal sense gratification. Krishna is a reservoir of mercy. No matter how low the jiva has fallen, Krishna still provides him with full facility to attain the highest spiritual position. How does he do that? Krishna does this. This is his lila. This is his pastime. He appears personally before them along with his spiritual abode and his eternal associates. And jivas, taking advantage of this merciful opportunity, can attain a higher position and reach the spiritual world. Then Vajranava asks the question, well, if this is Bhagavan's pastimes, or for the sake of Bhagavan's lila, this kridartam, atmanam, why must the jiva suffer? Guruji answers, the jivas possess some independence, which is a sign of Bhagavan's special mercy upon them. However, being opposed to Krishna, the jiva has become impure through engaging in material sense gratification. Therefore, he must be purified by suffering various miseries in this material world. By suffering miseries, the misery of the jiva as opposed to Krishna finally transforms into happiness, or finally leads to happiness. Suffering is therefore just a sign of Bhagavan's mercy. That is why intelligent people see the suffering of the jivas in Krishna's pastimes in the material world as auspicious. The foolish people only see a source of misery. Then the disciple Vajranath asks a question. Well, Krishna is all-powerful. Why couldn't he think of a path less troublesome and miserable and painful for the jivas to become rectified and elevated? Guruji answers, this is one of Krishna's pastimes, which are variegated and wonderful. Bhagavan can perform all kinds of pastimes because he's independent and almighty. No pastime can be rejected if there is to be true, full variety. Besides, even Krishna's parishas, nitya parishas, are participants in other pastimes. They also accept some suffering. Krishna is the enjoyer and the active agent. All ingredients and paraphernalia are controlled by his desire and subject to his activities. It is natural for a person to experience some suffering when he is under the control of some other person. If that suffering brings pleasure in the end, then that person won't consider it true suffering. How can you call this actual suffering that the jiva is undergoing in this Srishti Leela, or this Kridartam Atmanam of this Tri Jagat? The so-called suffering that the jiva is undergoing in the material world, or that he's undergoing in order to nourish and support Krishna's pastimes, is actually a source of delight. The jiva's desire for independence has caused him to abandon the pleasure of serving Krishna and instead accept suffering in maya. It's the jiva's choice. It's his independence. It's his fault. It's not Krishna's. This independent jiva is a beloved servant of Krishna. But Krishna is compassionate towards him. So seeing the misfortune and how he's misused his independence and is now suffering due to his attachment of Maya, Krishna chases after the jiva. He runs after the conditioned soul, weeping and weeping. And he comes to this material world and appears before the conditioned soul to deliver him. This is Krishna's pastime. It's preaching Leela, it's preaching pastime. Krishna's heart melting with mercy for his jivas, he manifests his achintya Leela in the material world, thinking that his appearance will enable the jivas to see his nectarian pastimes. But somehow the jivas don't understand the truth about Krishna's pastimes, even after receiving so much mercy by the compassionate Lord. So then Krishna comes again, and Kali Yuga descends as Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu in Navadvipa. Then he takes the form and plays the role of the guru. He personally describes the process of chanting his own name and form, qualities and pastimes. And he personally instructs and inspires the jivas to take to this path of Nam Sankirtan, Bhakti Yoga, Shuddha Bhakti, Braja Bhakti. Well, this is also the Leela, Gaur Leela, in the material world. He personally inspires the jivas to take to this path by practicing it himself and showing everyone. So how can one accuse Krishna of being at fault in any way when he's so merciful? Krishna is so merciful. His mercy is unlimited. But our fortune is lamentable. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing that this is the Leela of the Lord, which is actually indicated here. So, appropriately by the wife of Bali Maharaj, "Oh my Lord, you have created the entire universe for the enjoyment of your personal pastimes. This material world is Leela Bhumi. It's a place of Krishna's pastimes, and we jivas, Tattvastha jivas, we are part and parcels of Krishna. We are situated in this Leela Bhumi of the material world. We are here for the pleasure of the Lord, by the design and arrangement and creation of the Lord. With his intention, his will, we are placed here and situated here in this region, transitional region between external and internal potency. Well, let us play the Leela perfectly for the pleasure of the Lord. Not suffer, but transcend and enter the eternal pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan." In text 29, 30, in this chapter 22, describes how Vamanadeva actually wanted to test his devotee, Bali Maharaj, to see how attached he was, whether he was more attached to material sense gratification or serving the Lord. Bali Maharaj passed the severe test that Krishna put before him. And this is further proof that the mercy he gave him, of how much mercy the Lord showed to his devotee. Sometimes, Krishna subjects his devotee to severe tests that are almost unbearable. One could hardly even live under the conditions which Vamanadeva forced upon Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj endured all these severe tests and austerities. That is proof of the mercy of Krishna. Krishna appreciates the devotee's tolerance and forbearance, and he remembers it and he records it for the future glorification of the devotee. Krishna not only tested Bali, but also gave him the strength to tolerate such adversity. Well, this is the conclusion, that Krishna is so kind to his devotee that even when he's severely testing him, Krishna gives his devotee the necessary strength to be tolerant and continue to remain a glorious devotee. In text 35, there's a discussion how Vamanadeva sends Bali Maharaj to Sutta Loka. Then he describes how he'll give him protection. Rakshishye sarvato ham tam sanugam samparichadam sada sannihitam vira tatramam drakshate bhavan. This is where they get the idea that Vamanadeva became the doorman of Bali on Sutta Loka, because he's saying that sada sanihitam, I will always be situated near you in your place. Well, in this verse, Vamanadeva is assuring his devotee that when he goes to Sutala, that he himself, the Lord, will be there to protect him. He'll be sada sanihitam, always situated nearby his devotee. O great hero, O Vira, Bali, I shall always be with you and give you protection in all respects, along with your associates and paraphernalia. Moreover, you will always be able to see me there. Tatramam drakshyate bhavan. Drakshye, drishya, you'll be able to see me there. No question can be asked. Did Lord Vamanadeva agree to accompany Bali Maharaj to Sutoloka to be his doorman or protector because of all the charity he gave? Is that true or false? So that's false. And this is explained by, in his commentary on the Bhagavatam called Brihad Bhagavatamritam, Sanatana Goswami discusses this point about sada sanihitam, always that Vamanadeva said, I'll always be near you. What this actually means, or in other words, the idea of being the doorman, this is described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita Part 1, Chapter 3, Prapanchatita, Beyond the Material World, Prapanchatita, Texts 82 and 83. Maryada Langakasyapi Gurava Deshatri Tomone Sampana Svagvajala Satyat Tantasi Yadbale Dware Tadrig Avastanam Tuchadana Falam Kemku Rakshanam Tushtabanasya Kimnu Matstavakaritam. Now this is this verse Sanatana Goswami is mentioning Dware Tadrig Avastanam. My dear sage, Bali violated spiritual etiquette by disobeying the order of a spiritual master and failing to be true to his own words. Still, as we know, Lord Vamanadeva agreed to become the guard at Bali's door. Was that simply the fruit of Bali's insignificant charity? The Lord also granted protection to the wicked Bana. Was that the result of my offering the Lord's prayers? What he says in his commentary. Lord Vishnu favored Bali only because Bali was the grandson of Prahlad. By defeating Indra and occupying his throne, Bali violated the natural order that the demigod should rule heaven. And he disobeyed the orders of his guru. So the Lord reciprocated because Prahlad, his grandfather, was a great devotee and dear devotee of Vishnu. Bali did not deserve the benediction to receive the Lord as his gatekeeper because he violated the universal order by defeating Indra, throwing out the demigods. He transgressed his guru's order and he broke his promise to Vamanadeva to give 3 steps in charity. His petty charity could not have purchased God. So the only feasible explanation why Bali got such good fortune was because of the intimate exchange of prema bhakti between Prahlad and his worshipful Lord. Text 36 describes more of the meaning of protection. Vamanadeva goes on, verse 35, he said, I will give you protection and I'll be there with you all the time. Become your dwara, digdwara, tadrigdwara, be your gatekeeper. Then he says, tatra dhanava daityanam sangatte vavasura trishwa mad anabhavam vai sadhya kunto vinanksh yati. This is text 36, chapter 22, 8th canto. Vamana said, listen, Bali, because on Sutala you will see my supreme prowess, your materialistic ideas and anxieties that have arisen from your association with demons and Danavas would immediately be vanquished. So the Lord is describing multi-levels of protection, how he's going to protect him. Because in the previous verse, he told that he will protect him. In verse 35, he says, Bali, listen. Rakshishye sarvato. Aham tvam, I will protect Raksha, you, tvam, sarvato, in all different ways, in all respects. So in this verse, he lists three different ways, or three different levels of protection. First, he says, Danava Daitya Sangam. Lord Vamana said, I will protect you in the first way. I will protect you externally from associating with demoniac persons. Then he said, Asura Bhava. I will protect you internally from developing a demoniac mentality. Because externally, when you have bad association, Asat Sangha, as Lord Chaitanya said, Asat Sangha Tyag Evaishnavachara. This is the behavior, quality, or characteristic of a pure Vaishnava. He avoids association with materialistic non-devotees, abhaktas, and mayavadis, stri sangis. Because, first there's the external physical association, hearing from, speaking, seeing, moving with, eating with, talking, etc. And that will affect our bhav. That will affect us internally, our mentality, our sabhav, our aspirations and desires. Our faith, our determination, our taste in bhakti may become diminished or diluted because of the bad association. And then our heart, due to bad association, our heart will be full of different anxieties, become doubtful about Krishna due to bad association, or doubtful about bhakti or devotees or the process of devotion. So these three things are addressed here. The external, the internal mental plane, and the heart plane. In this verse 36, Vamana Maharaj is describing the three levels, multi-level protection. In verse 35 he says, Rakshishye sarvato aham tvam. I will protect you on all different levels, sarvato, in all respects. So these are the three aspects of a being, external, physical, internal, mental, then deep internal, heart, or emotional. And this verse is saying, Dhanava Daityanam Sangat Bhava Asura Sadhyo Kunto Vinakshati. He says, firstly, Vaman promises to protect Vamanadeva from external physical bad association, Dhanava Daitya Sangha. Protect him from associating with demons. And he promises to protect him internally and mentally from Asura Bhav. He won't develop this Ishura Bhav or this demoniac mentality. Ishwaraham Mahambogi Siraham Balavansuki, the Asura Sampat or Asura Sambhav of Gita. The demoniac mentality. And thirdly, the kunta, the anxiety that rises within the heart, the heart anxieties, emotional anxieties that will be produced from external physical and mental association or bad association will make the heart anxious and full of kunta. So he's Vaikunthanath. Vamanadeva is Vaikunthanath. He says, Sadhyo kunta vinakshati. I will immediately destroy all these anxieties that arise in the heart due to bad association. The heart level and the mind or mental level of Asura Bhava and the external physical level of Danava Daitya Sangha. I would destroy any demons that come to attack you on this planet. I will destroy them immediately. Sadhya Vinakshati. Any demons attack you on your Sutta Loka, I'll be there to destroy them. Any demoniac thoughts and desires and ideas that attack your mind internally in the mental level, I will be there immediately to destroy them. Any anxieties, material feelings and doubts and anxiousness and anxieties that attack your heart internally in the emotional level, I'll immediately be there to destroy them. The Prabhupada explains in his purport, the Lord assured Bali Maharaj of all protection. And finally, the Lord assured him of protection from the effects of bad association with the demons. So we describe what it means, all protection. Rakshishe Sarvato. Bali Maharaj certainly became an exalted devotee, but he was somewhat anxious because of his association was not purely devotional. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vamanadeva, assured him that his demoniac mentality would be annihilated. In other words, by association of devotees, demoniac mentality is vanquished. We can learn a lesson from this verse. We see that this great, exalted, powerful personality in Satyuga, Bali Maharaj, was so intimate with the Lord and so devoted that he had Saksha Darshan, the Vaman Avatar. He is anxious. He's actually Kunta. He's feeling anxious about bad association. How much more anxious we should be. How much more concerned and worried and anxious we should be about bad association. Materialistic people, non-devotees, abhaktas, tree sanghas, envious people, haters of devotees, blasphemers of devotees, offenders of devotees. How careful and how anxious we should be about bad association. Even Bali Maharaj, who was in constant association with the Lord, Sada Sanihitam, the Lord was always with him, always associating with him, and even he was anxious. So the Lord, understanding his heart and mind, is trying to pacify him and assure him with his own words, calm him down. Don't worry, I will give you all protection, physically, mentally, emotionally, externally, internally. And he says, and then Prabhupada explains that how do we counteract all this bad association of non-devotees, relatives, family members, materialists, so-called old friends and acquaintances, or even brothers and sisters. He said this demoniac mentality, which is produced by bad association, can be immediately vanquished by the association of devotees. Satam prasangan.